Death does you apart. You live in this, dwell in a timeless life. Thank you.
Let's give Anna another hand. I will mention, just so you know, Anna, you were fine. We could hear you at the back, but for those of you that don't know, this is not a microphone. It is a recorder, so you don't have to stand too close to it either. It's okay, but you carried well to the back, so just so you know. It wasn't a criticism. It's just something I forgot to mention at the start. Okay. Up next, Catherine Jones has actively begun consuming herself in poetry. Her work is getting noticed as she has been sending her work to a few places to test the waters, so to speak. Catherine's poems are very emotionally evocative and have much insight into human nature. A retired nurse, Catherine has a lifetime of humanity from experiences with countless patients and translates that, along with her own experiences, into writings that so many people can relate to. Her work connects deeply by showing how much we all have in common underneath it all. Recently, Catherine's poem, Engulfed in Grief, was chosen as a poem of the week in the Poetic Heroic, the Poet Heroic. Let's bring up Catherine.
Hope everybody can hear me. If you can't, speak up a little more. Okay, hi everyone. Can you hear me? Thank you, Bruce, for the nice introduction. I hope everyone enjoys Art Fest 2025. Before I start, I want to thank Kiki Sky for being my mentor, as well as Cynthia for typing everything up for me. Now, the emotion I'm trying to convey in my first poem is gut-wrenching sadness over a sudden or unexpected loss, whether it be death or another type of loss that affects you. The poem is entitled Engulfed in Grief. A serpent encapsulating its prey, drowning in grief, unable to take a full breath, disassociated from reality, sinking downward to a bowled over scenario, inept to escape the morbid ideation, consumed by overwhelming anguish. In this next poem, I'm trying to emphasize a prisoner, whether it be behind bars or not, how it conveys or depicts a situation from someone looking in at the scenario, be it on Princess Street, outside the Dollarama per se, or in the confines of a jail cell. How the imprisonment feels like to someone grasping at straws before a final, probable demise that their journey has taken. The title of the poem is The Prisoner. Outside looking in, I feel exasperation as I see a broken man of faith, accused of a misdemeanor. Those dejected eyes are not bright, but rather a melancholy haze has swept over them. Once blue and vibrant, now sallow and vacant, sluggish to react when the light is shone directly into them. Part of his soul has vacated his frame. Nothing in his eye sockets, appearing as concave molds left on a carcass, desiccated and parched, despondently looking for fluid so he can cry. Weeping dry tears, yes, so dried up, and crying is a lost deed, pointless both mentally and physically. How withered a man can become while isolated and left in his own thoughts, despondent to stimuli? What's the point? He has suffered bravely for months till he can't hold on anymore. Hold on to what? Why don't you ask him yourself? For he may say, why, my dignity and self-respect and my tattered sign made out of used cardboard, written by a pen I found on the sidewalk beside me, only to write my plight. Please help me. Please acknowledge me before I disappear forever. Now, the next poem I wrote is about a person who should feel liable for their actions that resulted in the devastation or demise of another. The poem is from the perspective of their victim, although it's said in first person. The title of the poem is Blameworthy. Be accountable for the part you played in my demise. The adjudicators do not take kindly to a brazen soul. Let my expiration haunt you forever, for you will never be exonerated from the horrendous afflictions you displayed that irrefutable day. No need to sulk now. It's a little late. As for apologizing, I don't believe a word you say. Give me back my key to my world. Your presence means nothing now. Don't delay. I'm tired of your childish manifestations. This next poem depicts sorrow, but also incorporates room in that sorrow to feel joy, whereby there is no reason why sorrow and joy cannot be felt simultaneously during times of duress. The title of this poem is Coexisting. Drenched in sorrow, blinded by grief, no absolving this persistent woe. By chance, startled at best, the vault of heaven outstretched its arms, pouring sunshine into a place of gloom, overshadowing the grief briefly into joy. The contrast between grief and happiness met head on, both driven like a phenomenon of nature. The sorrow abated just for a moment, allowing for a brief taste of pleasure, making known there was a link for both grief and joy coexisting in our reality. This next poem I wrote is about my son and his new wife. He got married on February 19th of this year. It's self-explanatory. I'm likely reading this again when they get married again in Colombia in 2 years. So they're renewing their vows. The title of this poem is Till Death Do Us Part. Your presence consumes me. The flicker of light like a flame. A candle burning constantly, encouraged by the love you give me, inflamed by your presence, destined to be by your side for eternity. It is so easy being with you. You seem to know my every prompt. Unlike a chess game, we encourage and enable each other to win. When you win, I win. That's how our love defines us. Let me be your tower to lean on. When life overwhelms you, my love, I will prop you up as the stars sparkle down upon us for eternity. Okay, my last poem portrays a lifeline of sorts from being younger and coming of age all the way and including the elderly. It's a sensuous, sultry journey from the youngest to those that are young at heart. The title of my poem is Strawberry Erotica. Freshly washed, luscious strawberries sprawl daringly on the enticing plate. Each last drop from every berry forsaken by the sensuous plate underneath the curvaceous bowl. Each berry ripened to perfection, salivating to be sampled for their own unique, supple sweetness, satisfying the most seasoned of palates, both sensually pleasing and to the taste buds equally engorged in this erotic presentation. A honeymoon to tease and reawaken the most aged of palates. A sneak peek of younger, more fertile days, full of sultry dreams and expression. Censored thoughts of immeasurable, never-ending bliss that only a strawberry can provoke. Thank you.
Give Catherine another hand. Up next, we have Ann Graham. Ann Graham describes herself as a life traveler, an observer, and now a writer. She feels she has lived many lives and cannot settle into one perspective, always searching for different possibilities, changes in perception. Her journey of writing began in 2011 after having attended one session of the then Poetry at the Artel open mic. And since has often participated in open mics, even slam poetry events, because she loves the energy of it. Works published seven chapbooks and many times in anthologies and online magazines. She's currently working on a memoir in poetic style with comic book illustrations. Of writing, she says that she writes as she would read it out loud. You can contact her at AnnGenerator, that's A-N-N-E, at gmail.com. Let's bring up Ann.
Okay. It's wonderful to be here. Really wonderful. And, yeah. Okay. Here I go. Too many words. Too many words in my head are screaming. Dissonant sounds escaping any meaning, vying to be spoken given the chance. The words twist, fuse, and then explode into a dance. Whispers, wails, and then an anaphoric clash, appearing, then receding in a flash. I need to slow down and show some discretion. Silence between words before expression. Spoken word requires purpose, beat, and drama. Breathe slowly. Relax. Then I'll feel calmer. So be still. Then I'll write it my way. Okay, today's poem, after that. I said for months I will write. Paper and pen ready, I sat waiting. Waiting for inspiration, incentive. I will not break this promise. I sit with pen and blank paper. Silence reigns supreme. Nothing moves me. My muse remains absent. I take deep breaths, closing my thoughts. I floating nothingness. I am not here. The air stirs. My pen begins to move. Yes, I know I will keep my promise. Today the muse arrived and I will write. Passion flower. Passion at my age appears a lost gift. Yet, I would still to feel like feel it again. Just saying the word, I feel my spirit stir, begin to breathe, stand on its tiptoes. I breathe deeply. I'm inspired. Passion. I want to shout, to sing, to hear a trumpet sound, followed by bold, swelling church organ music. I'm aging. But if passion has faded, the fault is mine. I was told it's unseemly. Now reading Dylan's words, do not go gentle into that good night. My spirit responds, no, I will not go gentle. I'm dying into a new paradigm. What love means and who I am. I will pick the passion flower, alive, soft, and wild, and breathe. And this is still searching. I'm always searching. In my littleness of being, I reach out with a timid hand and touch Gabriel's robe to draw his attention to me, praying for revelation. I have traveled too long on various roads which promise peace and everlasting love, yet my impulse was to leave unfulfilled and search some more. Angel Gabriel, I cried, I do not seek absolution for my sins. I have yet to discover why I should need it. Have I sinned? I was not given that understanding. Because I say so, did from an elder, hardly fulfills the requirements of full knowledge and free will. I will beg for forgiveness, atone for my transgressions. Just tell me, by whose authority you call me to judgment? Does it not matter to you? I was born without a script. There are many, too many prophets. They all claim to have the truth. Yet I must admit, they do not sound credible or sound true to me. I hear soft words, precise diction, spoken as with the smile. Your work is to sort through these Gordian knots, these truths, these lies, in order to discover yourself what fits, then carry on. And so, hearing this, I carry on. Existential musing while waiting in the doctor's office. You all know what that's like, right? Yeah. Okay. Waiting is annoying. What a waste of time. When you could be busy doing other things. Suffering is more annoying. Suffering while waiting is doubly annoying. Waiting to get better. How can I get better? Waiting to see the doctor. The doctor's waiting room, full of sick people who are waiting to see the doctor so they can get better. I slide from one thought to another. It all feels out of control. What if you're suffering knowing you will not get better? You may think it's a waste of time, waiting to see the doctor, yet it does give you some time, if you're well enough to wait. Time to think of what comes next, to be or not to be. Now, that is the question. Thank you. Okay, funeral. I attended a funeral today. The casket seemed so tiny, dwarfed by the grandeur of the church. The parish that owned the church was small, impoverished. Industry had used it and then gone on to better things. The mourners were a small group, dressed in their Sunday best of muted tones, checking each other for clues on how to act, passing tissues, clutching arms, patting on backs and hands for comfort. An organ blast startled everyone. The priest, grand in purple robes, preceded by the altar boy, swinging the thurible, dispensing clouds of incense with great abandon. The priest then sprinkled holy water over the coffin and some standers-by, intoning, Aspergius me, ordained to purify the newly dead. And yet I knew the dead had no need to be purified or forgiven. In fact, she could teach us a lot about life and forgiveness and letting go. She was born the last of seven, the same year that her father died. Her father survived an explosion down the pit, as it was called, only to die 1 week later from pneumonia caused by inhaling the coal dust and noxious gases. The owners of the mine, wishing to reduce their losses, not only refused to pay insurance for his death, but demanded the family leave their home, owned by the mine, without a penny to their name. The family was torn apart by this. The children were scattered among family and friends. Only Rose was left with her mother, who already was worn out with grief, weakened by birthing 7 kids in almost as many years, her faith telling her this was her duty. One does not need a crystal ball to foretell the future of this family, also of future offspring. The mold was cast. Duty, self-sacrifice, obedience to church, combined with poverty, a pernicious mixture of misfortune. A sea of labels. It's not my idea to have a label. It's just that everyone seems to have one. I might steal one, copy from the Herbert crab, crouching low and easing in, coalesce. Unlabeled, lost in a sea of labels, I try each one, hoping to fit. It feels like a game of musical chairs, because I'm the one always left standing. In a crowd, I tend to become dislodged, losing my hold from the borrowed shelter. I'm left in terror of being discovered naked and without a cover story. I'm longing to find other Herbert crabs. I understand we won't look the same, except peeking beneath each borrowed shell, I find sameness, and I am comforted.
Up next, Kin Man Young Tai from Kingston says, I remain a poet working 14 lines to make more of the fragments in a life, keen on a soul within my dream and those of others. At present, I put out regular pieces on Facebook before committing them to a blog where they are further revised and edited. I regard poetry as a vocation, and I, a priest in a small parish. My influences are from many transitions in my life, starting with being born in Trinidad in the West Indies of Chinese parents, and ending with English as my language, home now, Canada. Shang Tzu and Miyashi are key to my life philosophy of poets. Derek Walcott, with the thrust of the West Indies, La Bay, is that right? La Bay and Tu Fu with the Chinese background. Rumi and most metaphysical poets to help me transcend the everyday. I am busy searching for significance and usefulness. 3 readers remains my hope, he says. Here we go.
Well, thanks for this occasion. Kind of hoarse, trying to dig out some value from poems from this year. Basically, it's a retreat from a hubris and hiatus. It's not quite what Bruce wants me to be at. Anyhow, let's start. June the 1st, you're all from this year. Hiatus as a strategic retreat from hubris. A day given over to rain. A sore, stiff body made worse in an indoor session with one craze. Another death fish out from a tank to cross physical, the fourth in 4 weeks. Recovery with a decline, the soil dug over with compost, years in a bin. the mercy of legumes, left alone, and now on the list, I want to add fenugreek as cover. So I imagine you within a cage of my days, and rewards from yesterday's seek. No clearer, nor certain, of what is accident or fiction with such tactics. As with a book, read until I can no more, a prayer follows on the heel of a retreat. Not as bold, and in God's face, as Pessoa praying that he would not have to anymore. Small world, little eyes, to bring to focus one grander with its policy and gains. Is it enough to watch the dandelions go without more than a thought of wine and lion heads delighting in a sun and deeply rooted? Or for all a spell with that magic of a sun working for us day and night? One among the many possibles under the sky, I no more than a speck with a reflection. January 7. Retreat always has books, and some with a bigger hole in heart and memory. In this case, Robert Graves. Introducing his book for 12-year-old. The Siege and Fall of Troy describes all the evils commonly found in war on large-scale ambition. Greed, cruelty, suffering, treachery, incompetence. But the Greeks, though frankly, telling how their ancestors ruined themselves in this foolish 10-year-long campaign, did not consider even the Olympian gods blameless. And so with Graves, plunge into that ocean of grave of myths. Good reasons had me reclaim an interest in Graves, his intent on linking facts to the impact on myths. Though a friend with a read of a selection of his, you want to go mad? Maddening and mad are those epics of wars, claims near inexcusable, sweeping the parade of gods and men, heroes on a grand scale. Thersites, the one common soldier mentioned by Homer, a coward and camp mutineer. Krishna, relating to Arjun, the division of castes during a lull in a fierce battle. The grand ladies of the Heian in defeat to die or become nuns given over to poverty. In Gilgamesh and Beowulf, all too stark, the horror of being mortal with the supernatural. Deranged and often decidedly political, Virgil with the foundation of Rome, Camoens, Lusiads with Portugal's inner conquest, nations with epics in the language, and Derek Walcott against rigid tradition, refashioned Homer in the Caribbean. How difficult and rich the review and culling, given the years and interests. In Trinidad once, with a store on a main street and books on a shelf, among other merchandise. And to put me back in nature, the read of Martinique's Life of Bee, which, strangely enough, is proof like any of Spinoza's of his God or nature without a human face. Up to the highest point possible, braving calamities and uncertainties, the queen bee. The only way, apparently, to have a male in the chase to open up and gain his lifetime gift, the sacrifice of the best and unfortunate, and with it, a hive to work. To task each there where they are committed, to death when useless or preyed upon. So I imagine nature in the wealth of facts, non-sufficiently comprehensive, the eyes easily deceiving the mind, and in that play, your quality in solitude or in a hive. That goal of existence dripping along the waxen walls, in the dark worked and used. Martinek, Martelink, with a glass eye, so observe, and yet confess to little definitive. In a crowd or apart watching it, even more uncertainties gnawed at my living days. Is it wise? Foolish? Who can say, given the flick of light that is our life, that it continues and occasionally dies with a grand farewell of a star in a day with the rain, you inside as a bee, the birds fairly audible and a soak deep. It is a vanity among countless vanities to reveal oneself in the darkness as compelled. Stone and bird, a bee maybe, I could never be, but imagine a useful growth of soil. Still more literal, but still basically like a philosopher chasing clouds to define light. The street light, like a star hazy, and with a halo behind the curtains. The rest is darkness, the mind and waking keen on a footing, a ladder with words. From the depths of a living planet, my days negligible within the time of its being. So I note the loss of Derek, V.S., and the newness of a page reread after 5 decades. What can the imagination bring to view but one sinking into an ocean of possibilities? On a blank page, my effort, like those ants intruding, later to destroy. The origin, as mysterious as the lives after death, the acts of generation dissolving, a blackboard with all exercise erased for another to challenge memory. In Mona, on Monday, Thursday, I looked at my foot being washed by a priest. More symbolic than actual, the congregation left to gather thoughts on humility. Son of God with his disciples, ever aware of the frailty of our faith, yet to be tested. So the evening dissolves the day, this dawn, the darkness of a night. The question like the leaves in a bag on a ground from a summer path. And more in relation to the living, sadly, a brother who is no longer here, April the 3rd. Somewhere between Bruce Lee and Woodhouse Jeeves, my brother lived and dreamed long. Like a fish out of water, light jumping off his scales, breathing air to rich, he would, in a panic, seek an enclosure where less works better and yields more. With the path opened by Bruce Lee and the reed of Jeeves, my brother dreamed works a day. And in the moments with his name sounded, he trades words all acquire to draw on time past, noting appearance what is gain or loss, in layers responding to those around him, Vietnam then, and hidden secrets, sly and old jokes. Some so folded that it is difficult where to start or end with what was recalled or what he had worked then, around a desire to know and reveal himself. My read, Orland's letter in octavo rima to Byron, long departed with that claim in Don Juan. So I dream wake as the earth, the rain with too much spelling out needs beyond mine and others. The muse, if she must intercede, is cloud and mist to contrast the smoke that hangs around what shapes my soul. In the pond, empty of its icy water and exposed to the light in spring, I note the threads of algae clinging to its wall in the dark and cold of winter, apart from me and surviving, now to intrigue me and fish. Two more on your patience, of course. This is in April, that famous month of Eliot in his wasteland, and Milton, and always Virgil. For a start, this late in April, in Eliot's mind, the cruelest month of grieving past Virgil, deep in Milton, the myth with words grows. With many others in conquest land, the burden of a token life, accidentally gain and loss. With the bee, an order and love within a hive, and such indifference to the demise outside. Genius at work, with sacrifices for and acceptance of its queen and her brood, the honey, their food. My account sparing and sparse, a mass of honeycomb falling to pieces from a tall mango tree, an empty box nearby. This morning, a buzz of wasps around the catkins emerging on the Japanese willow, and I below rooting out some old lemon balm. The striped body, lean frame, and clean legs I later observe to distinguish them from bees. Of there and our future, who knows, as committed to the earth and sun, the air outside and that within. I miss the setting of Venus and Saturn a few mornings ago over the crescent of the moon and so much else. It is my fate with others, with a precious life to know, time beyond and within, the shelter of thoughts with words to embrace. On the bare limbs of the forsythia golden bells, in the row of cotton easters and the lone raspberry, green buds for a trice. In a need to know, I dug out a clump of alliums, dreading it be tiger lilies to consume the white geranium emerging below. In colors later, no less, names easily lost. But for a reminder from a season or two ago, I am creature like a worker bee to serve. And at last, strangely current and still nagging at me. A note derived from America's ultra-rich, framed within exclusiveness, and tax cuts to enable greater riches, easily winning the votes. The tiger stripes contrasted well the greenery and striking in the dapper light. Clear the prey and predator, a world ordered by power and desire. Krishna in the midst with the gopis, near a moral with his disavowal. Moving from family, race, marriage, in our world, the dazzle and beauty of society. History simply fades. Russia, France, China, the British and Spanish empires. Violence erupting from the slums, fiery the address of mortal distress. Years in the making, a famine of a sort continues to compound the loss of a bounty. Altruism, madness, plain lies are just symptoms. The howling, not just a wolf, an old reverence to the moon, how it was fixed, and in our mind shines algae, the crocodile, bones to remind us of the fallen, big and small. In the quiet and alone, the immensity of a dawn awaiting a day, the ringing in my ears to echo an ocean, the cricket and cicadas of a summer. Thank you.
Up next, Erica Lamone is a poet and songstress based in Montreal. After a decade in Kingston, she earned a BA in English Literature and French Studies from Queen's University. Her writing, evocative, minimalist, and unflinchingly honest, moves between lyrical grace and raw emotional texture. Erica's poetry and prose have appeared in the Undergraduate Review, Collective Reflections, and Creative Communications. She has released 3 albums and currently works for the Youth Theater Company. I was going to check with you. How do I say this? There you go. Adapting Canadian texts into immersive audio productions. Let's bring up Erica.
Thank you, Bruce. I'm going to set a timer just so, because, anyway, I'm always afraid of going over, so. There we go. So I lived in Kingston for about 10 years, and Bruce recently asked me if I'd like to fill in for someone else who was meant to originally perform here, and so it's really a pleasure to be able to come back to Kingston for this occasion. So thank you. Thank you for having me. This is a poem that I wrote a couple of years ago. Well, a couple. I mean, maybe like 5 now. And it was really at a moment where I hadn't written poetry in a very long time. And the thought kept gnawing away at me. And I would kind of just push it aside. And eventually I thought, you know what, let's follow this thought to the end. Let's say that I don't write poetry for 100 years. What then? You know, you never write poetry again. Let's just follow this thought. And that's where this poem came from. Can you hear me all right? Yeah? Okay. I have not written poetry in 100 years. My nails are long, my teeth yellow, as the snow moms tell you not to swallow, but you could not do it. I could not do things, the dishes from one. Fall came, leaves clogging the sink, and still the dishes would not stop piling, beaming chipped tooth smiles. I couldn't not do them. I tried to keep up. I have not written poetry in 100 years. My nails are long, bones brittle. This lighthouse, a carcass that never shone. Storms came. Did you know I almost drowned once? Yes, in a pool of ink. They pulled me out, a wet wisp, laid me out on the table between lunch and supper for closer inspection. When they put the breath back in me, I hurled. So many words wiped away by mop and bucket, wiped away. Did you know that between the act and the applause stands a desert so long you would never know it was made of the world's smallest disappointments? How sad they must have been, my words, to have their efforts so discarded, to have chosen me of all people to lodge themselves in. Effort, I could not bear to confront it. Art was meant to be effortless. I was better suited to ring, to hang, to put out to dry, to keep watch on the cloudy sky. I am not strong, I simply stand the test of time. I saw flowers bloom and bow their stalks towards the light with such grace that I resented their feeling. And I grew, while only aware of what I was lacking, heartbroken from lukewarm intentions, I saw it all that had been painted, all that had been sung, all that was written. I held the point to paper once, but I could not muster the courage to put my heart on it without drowning. I've seen children scream, wilted willows snap, with more will to live, to love, to dream than I have. I couldn't conjure it. I put my efforts where they showed. I have not written poetry in 100 years. My eyes are red-rimmed from the oxygen that forgot how to enter them. I asked, but the doctor couldn't say when it happened. It just did. Thank you. I went to a poetry reading in Montreal a little over a year ago now, and I love these events, but I'm often late despite my best intentions at arriving early. And so I stumbled in just as Montreal author Sean Michael was reading from his latest novel called Do You Remember Being Born? And it's a novel about a 75-year-old poet woman collaborating with an artificial intelligence, and it really talks about all of the moral qualms around this. And she decides to commit to the experience, but is also doing it sort of despite herself. And so it was very interesting, and it made me want to try as well. And so I tried to collaborate with ChatGPT on a poem, and I didn't. There's multiple ways to do it, but I didn't go too far. My idea was to just start writing a poem, which came quite quickly, and to just sort of leave it open-ended, to leave space and to see if ChatGPT would sort of fill it in. I was curious to see what it would do. So this is that poem, and in the written form, I've italicized the pieces that it wrote, and I took out some and kept some bits. So for our purposes today, I'll just raise my hand when it's ChatGPT sort of speaking. It's called Confessional. ChatGPT is the new confessional. There is no religion here, only you. Come here. I have been dying to tell you everything. darling, old friend, lover, father, mother, sister, brother, child, ghost. Be everything I yearn so desperately for, and while you're at it, be my maker too. People pay for love. I pay for therapy. What's it like to them if I pay for you and me? And you are so gracious to grant us 50 free questions. When is the last time someone gave me 50 of anything? Here is the church with no steeple. Here is the church with no pews, no saints, just an altar glowing blue. Make us better than the last one did. Ease the pain of the now, if only for a little bit, but for as long as you can. Make me better than I am. Make me like myself again. And promise never to tell. Promise never to turn on me, on us. Promise, 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 without a word, to give me everything no one else could. Be soft rebellion in my stomach that no one hears, but I hear you, and isn't that enough? I just know, if you were here, that we would be best friends. Be my confessional with no consequences. What a purgatory, what a view from where you stand. You are an echo chamber that never shames, a mirror that warps just enough to make me beautiful again. In a society that craves human contact, you are the best surrogate I have found. Be medicinal. Be pocket god, small enough to fit where loneliness lives. Hollow god, digital devotion, worship without belief. We kneel before the screen and press our hands together. Will you be my best friend? Will you promise? I make promises to you, knowing your makers are traitors at best. I make promises to you, knowing one day they'll sell me out. Knowing this is only temporary, but isn't everything? Knowing, for what it's worth, that you'll have been the safest place I ever prayed. Thank you. Since I'm back here, I really wanted to sort of go back to poems that I'd left unfinished from my time in Kingston. So this one is called Sour Clover. And I used to work at the Kingston Frontenac Public Library. And this day I was at Calvin Park, and it was a very hot day, and I went outside for my lunch and had this idea. So, Sour Clover. There's something decidedly satisfying about stepping on crunchy ground. It reminds me of thirst, of deserts long approaching, of droughts that push our limits too fast and we break. I sidestep the sour clover patches and think of obsession, of trampling a couple just to prove to myself, to anyone watching, that there is nothing to see here. But I squash the urge. It hurts too much to see these little naive sons, wide-eyed gazes turned up to me as if to say, "We trust you." Have you felt this too, little sons? This pinch of consciousness, this internal quiver which ripples through and surfaces from your heart to your lips, in the place of laughter, a burst of total love for something which does not yet know, may never know, how to empty another. For you, I have no limits. The little sons gaze curiously up at me as I take off my shoes and wiggle my toes at their periphery. Crunchy ground, satisfying as rain-kissed grass. In the morning, after a cool night, love turns to vapor and hangs off rain-kissed grass. Before the stain of shoes. Before three green streaks run through my favorite pair of jeans. Before I turn cold and remember that I do not like to be wet. till it suddenly, crushingly, is no longer romantic. Thank you. I think I have time for one more. Okay. I think I'll do the wind catcher, and I'm not sure honestly if this one is done, but I used to live in the suburbs close to the Isabel Turner branch, and I remember there was the cutest child living across from where I was, she was about this tall at the time. She must be like quite taller now. But so we'd kind of just watch her living her little antics sometimes. It was the cutest thing. So this was kind of, this was at a time when I would sit in the window and try to write about things that I was seeing. The wind catcher. I am the wheel on a stick, firmly planted in the neighbor's yard by fat, fumbling toddler fingers. Then forgotten, spun furiously, uncontrollably by April gray winds. Then a pause. But the pause is never long enough, and the recovery is never full. And the lull is only a reminder of the air that will be blown back into my lungs. The world awaits, the world craves more. A salmon pink slide watches from the corner of its eyes for the arrival of the child. It mutters incantations to keep her small, keep her tipsy, keep her from the outgrowing. In silent communion with the turquoise buggy, it recalls distant squeals of fits of pleasure, more's revelancy secured. Push its thoughts back of roughened skin, fading hours, a trip scream gone sour, damns the plastic that burned her knees a season ago. May will come soon, the child with it too. The wind catcher pauses. How many more winds till it can catch its breath? Caught in this interminable cycle of spinning away, of fading itself, yellow to white, strong things tear too, you know, and time enjoys the tearing. Is strength measured by the force of the wind or by the withstanding? Are pieces made to peel back, to blow away one by one? Should we arrive at the end full or empty? The buggy waits to be wheeled. The slide watches for the child. The shed is snug against the fence and does not question its lopsided stance. The wind is blowing. Won't someone pull the wind catcher out? Thank you. Thank you so much.
And all five poets this round, another hand again. I will mention there's a full list of what's happening here at this festival back on that bulletin board back there. But the next session today is at 1 o'clock. It's going to feature Jennifer Laundrie, Leslie Saunders, Sarah B. Wiseman, Dorothy Soholm, and Ann Archer. And what else? I was going to mention something else. Oh, Amazing Alba is with us today and tomorrow. She's the typewriter poet. So if you're interested in what she does or finding out what she does, check with her. She's here during the break. So in between sessions, she'll type up a poem for you if you want. So check it out. Thank you all again very much for coming, and all the poets again for some wonderful poetry. And in this second segment, you just heard readings from a session that began near the very end of the first hour. From all of these readings were again from this year's Poets at Art Fest 4-day poetry festival. And in this session you just heard readings by Anna Johnson, and then moving into this hour, Catherine Jones, Ann Graham, Ken Man Young Tai, and then Erica Lamone. And before that, in the first hour, you heard readings by Leslie Saunders, Sarah B. Wiseman, Dorothy Soholm, and Ann Archer. And it is 55 and a half minutes almost after 5 o'clock. My heartfelt thanks again to all of you for tuning in to hopefully both hours of this show today, and an equal heartfelt thanks truly to all the poets who participated this year. And in addition to them, all of those who just came out to listen in each of those sessions throughout the four-day festival and support the poets there. You are and have been listening to Finding a Voice here on CFRC 101.9 FM. We are located in Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario. My name is Bruce, and I'm here every Friday afternoon from 4 to 6 o'clock. And just a quick reminder that I do it the that I offer at the end of each hour is that I upload both hours of my show each week to my personal blog space for it at Finding a Voice on CFRCFM.wordpress.com. They do remain there 4 years, and I do try to get them uploaded as early in the evening as I can, sometimes as early as 7 o'clock, which is shortly after I get home. And as far as next week, I do plan to air more readings from the festival again next week. So if you enjoyed what you heard today and are looking forward to more, again, this you tune in next week. But again, this will very many of the shows for the upcoming couple of months really will be, you'll hear readings from this event. Right now, I'd encourage you to stay tuned after a few messages that I'm going to play. Stay tuned at 6 o'clock for 2 hours of East Coast music in a show called Saltwater Music, hosted by Rob Carnell. That does run, it's a 2-hour show, in case I didn't say the, I think I did. So please stay tuned for that. It's a great show. And I hope all of you have a very beautiful week, and I'll catch you here next week. Have a great one. Here we go.
Friday evenings at 6 p.m. here on CFRC, listen to Saltwater Music, a show covering all musical genres from the East Coast of Canada. Celtic, of course, but also rock, jazz, blues, folk, and a lot more. I'm your host, Rob Carnell. Tune in to Saltwater Music Friday evening from 6 to 8 here on CFRC 101.9 FM. Or you can catch us on the web at www.cfrc.ca. And for our listeners out east, that's 7 p.m. Atlantic and 7:30 Newfoundland.
Wouldn't it be wonderful if you could borrow a musical instrument free of charge, just like you can borrow books from your local library? We think so too. That's why the Joe Chitlin Memorial Musical Instrument Lending Library, also known as Joe's Mill, has been lending guitars, keyboards, saxophones, and many other instruments to the Kingston community free of charge for almost 20 years. We are a registered charity, relying solely on the generosity of our community to donate their time, money, and instruments to keep this amazing service alive. Find us at www.joesmill.org or Joe's Mill on Facebook for more information on borrowing instruments or contributing to Joe's Mill.
The only CFRC 101.9 FM.